from the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show. Now, here are your hosts, Steve and Chris.
Yeah, Steve and stakeholders, we're going to talk NFL Combine. Just our reaction to what we saw. BleedBlueShow.com is our website. Audio archive episodes, iTunes podcast, Republic, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify for the millennials. And by the way, in 2 weeks from now, that will be our free agency episode. That's probably our second best episode in the off season for the football, because the NFL draft shows are probably our favorite or the best, or the stakeholder draft episodes are our best. But the NFL free agency episodes usually get a lot of buzz. If you guys remember, even last year, what really drove the offseason on this podcast was the trade, the midseason trade with Odell Beckham Jr. to the Browns. Matter of fact, that happened, I believe, on a Tuesday, and we had to do an impromptu episode. And I say all that to say is 2 weeks from now, we will be doing NFL free agency. So perhaps our football team, the Giants, make some moves. We'll talk about other moves around the league. Let's get to some of this NFL Combine stuff and get the reaction from the stakeholders, and welcome back to the people to the platform. Let's get them in the order that they call. Say hello to everybody. We're going to have a nice, fun dialogue tonight, man. It should be fun and spirited. I'm going to learn a lot from these stakeholders, and I'm sure they'll get some points from me and stuff. So we'll have some fun with that. Definition of lit, ninth wonder of the tailgate world, sir. Say hello to the people, sir. Big Blue of Arizona. How you doing, man?
Hey, Steve, Chris, what's going on, man? It's been a minute. How you guys doing?
What's going on, dude? How's everything? Everything all right?
Everything all right, man. 85 degrees in the Valley of the Sun, dude.
Wow. That's what's up. All right, cool. Stay right there, man. We're going to talk some NFL Combine or anything Giants related on this episode, on the Combine episode. Let's go to Krista. Krista, what's going on? How's everything?
Hi, Bleed Blue family.
Hey, all good?
All good.
All right. Sounds good. And of course, bring on Carl, Big Blue Chicago, bigbluechicago.com. Carl, what's going on, sir? How's everything?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening on a 46-degree night in Chicago.
Pretty good for Chicago. That's pretty good. That's what's up. Definition of lit. Let's go right down the line. Did you watch the Combine? If so, what did you like, dislike, whether it was the performances by the players or the prospects? We call them prospects. What about does that translate to anything it possibly does for your draft board or players you're scouting for? And then we'll go to Kristen, then we'll go to Carl, and we'll go back around. In general, what did you like or dislike about the 2020 Combine in Indianapolis?
You know, Steve, I don't know how you personally feel about the, the combine itself. I mean, you think that college seniors coming out are going to do amazing in this type of an environment where everybody's watching them run around in their underwear. But what really behooved me was that one punter or kicker that had the max record for the bench press. That was quite interesting. I forgot what his name was. It was a punter or a kicker. That pretty much stole the show. Now, as far as Giants related, Steve, I just wanted to say a couple things, and I'll just go on mute for a little bit. Once again, all the hype starts with the Giants. We should get this guy. We should get this guy. We should get that guy. He looked great. You see his time. You see his shuffle. You know, it is what it is. I mean, it really is not going to matter much to me until, obviously, the draft starts. But the one thing that I focused in on that is really Giants related, Steve, and I don't know if you, Carl, or Kristen caught on to this, but there was some commentary from both Joe Judge and David Gettleman.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
Steve, they both contradicted themselves. Now, you know I am not a Gettleman fan by any means. The guy is an absolute clown. I've got something special that I will be debuting in the draft on that note. But on one hand, you have Joe Judge that's not going to make any comments. Everybody has a clean slate.
Right.
Start for everybody. Not alluding to anything, and that includes Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones. Now, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't David Gettleman and some of his excerpts from local media, national media, the beat writers, say something completely different? Concerning to me is if they are talking to each other, they are not talking to each other, or they are, you see some sort of resistance between your head coach and your general manager going into the combine going forward.
Before you move on, I got to ask you, because I don't know the answer to this. I did hear the Joe Judge commentary. He was drinking Aquafina, and that, or right off the rip, I can't trust any person who drinks Aquafina. That's neither here nor there. But number two, what did Dave Gettleman say that contradicted Joe Judge? Because that part I did not hear. But if you could let me know, let the audience know, what happened with Gettleman?
I'm going to have to hopefully Carl will be coming on relatively soon. But it's some of the excerpts that he kind of disclosed were Daniel Jones is QB1. Saquon Barkley is the running back. So on one hand, you have complete evasiveness. And on the other hand, you have the general manager that is all in for his draftees. So and I was just reading it through some of, you know, the beat writers, you know, opinions or commentary. Carl hopefully can bring us up to speed on that. But they were not in unison, and that's what concerned me during that time.
Interesting.
They were not in unison where they should be about their players. Now, Steve, I want to ask you and Kristen and also Carl, why would Joe Judge – again, I have no issues with Joe Judge. I'm excited about this, all right? Why would Joe Judge say everybody has a clean slate, whereas when David Gettleman got here, if you remember, Steve, David Gettleman said everybody here has a clean slate. Look what happened.
Kristen, let's go right to you. You want to answer that question from Lit. And then also, Kristen, if you have any commentary on the combine, please do so, and then we'll go to Carl.
I think it's just too early to say anything. You know what I mean? To have all that start and kick up, it's too early in the game for all that, honestly. You know, I understand where Judge is coming from as far as a clean slate, and he wants to treat everybody equal. Let's start at a level playing ground. I get that part, but I don't think you can really do that. This is a year that we're going to finally see who's going to make the cut, who's not going to do it anymore. This is it. That's just how I feel about that. But I think it's just too early I don't know. He's a little a bit optimistic for me, but that's all good and dandy, but it's too early in the game to, start saying, oh, everybody's going to be on the same page, on the same level. That's, I don't necessarily agree with, but we'll just have to see. We're on a wait and see basis. So just going to have to wait.
Any commentary on the combine before we go to Carl and answer that question from Lit?
Oh, I want to hear what Carl says, and then we can get into the combine. I'm just curious.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Carl.
Yes.
Lit's question. Lit, you want to read? Go ahead and ask that question again, Lit, to Carl directly.
All right. Carl, if you did happen to watch some of the pressers with Joe Judge and then with David Gettleman, obviously Joe Judge said everyone gets a clean slate. You obviously remember what happened when David Gettleman said everybody gets a clean slate. But during both of their interviews at the combine, they were not the left foot was not talking to the right foot. They were both saying contradictory things to each other. Can you please break it down?
Okay, so I didn't see all of this, but I think what you might be referencing was something that I saw in the paper a couple of days ago. That reference, if you remember when Gettleman was hired, he was talking about bringing in players to quote-unquote build culture. And so Judge had a comment a couple of days ago where he basically said that you don't sign older players to build a culture, that it's the coaching staff's responsibility to build the culture. Is that kind of what you were getting at?
You did go there, which I did forget to include. But the whole clean slate thing, the whole point where he wasn't going to comment, Joe Judge said everyone's on a clean slate. David Gettleman said that 2 years ago And then the whole Carl, I'm sorry. You know, he wasn't going to comment about Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. He wasn't going to commit to anyone has a job guaranteed.
Okay, I think I know what you're referencing there, because for whatever reason, he is not referring to any Giants player by name for some strange reason when he's being asked questions. And I just found that I heard that on the radio, and I heard that, and I was like, okay, this seems a little odd. Like what game is being played by the coach trying to, I guess, put every player on eggshells and simply not refer? It's almost like some like weird sort of psychological militaristic game that I just find to be trash that the coach is doing that doesn't really do anything.
Carl, last thing, and I love when you come in and give your spin. So I mentioned that when Joe Judge said everybody on this team as of right now is on a clean slate. If you remember, David Gettleman said that too, and that included Odell Beckham Jr., Landon Collins, Eric Flowers. Obviously, you know what happened, hence going forward. I don't like that clean slate theory because some players are not getting that clean slate. Some players are going to be gone.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. Now, I didn't hear that particular part, but I think if the coach hasn't been watching game tape of the last 16 games that the Giants played, he's simply doing a terrible job right off the bat, because you'd be able to make a couple of conclusions about a number of players without needing to have a clean slate. The tape would tell you exactly what you need to know.
I mean, does that mean that Nate Solder's getting a clean slate this coming year? I mean, I just don't like that verbiage, because we know what 2 years ago came on the scene as the general manager, hence 2 years now. Now you have the coach saying that.
Yeah, I want to give him a chance, but there's a big part of me that sort of believes that this particular guy is almost like a puppet for the general manager, that his sort of – his sort of style, the way he communicates, there's just a weird vibe that this guy gives off. That I'm just my detector is up very, very high in this guy. I'm sensing fraud with this dude, right? You know, easily. Maybe it's gonna take a while for it to get to evade and go away. But boy, anytime I just hear him talk, I'm just like, you know, and I don't want to compare it to a guy who – I don't want to make a political reference on this, but, you know, he sounds like a guy who's, like, heard a lot of speeches and who's seen a lot of writing and is almost trying to emulate somebody that he might not actually be.
Okay. All right. Cool.
All right.
Hey, Steve, can you give your spin on this? I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to break the commentary down. What do you think?
I don't overthink what they say. See, here's my thing, man. I'm only going to go off of what he said, and I saw the entire presser on that first day of the combine. He said a lot of different things, different answers. Like he said, he spent a lot of time with the coaches. I'll put it like this. I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember word for word, but he did say something along the lines of he's met with the staff, he's met with the executives, the scouts, such and such, and they spend a lot of time together in Indianapolis to the point it's almost like college. He said that they're not having toga parties or something like that. I remember he said it in the sense of they're spending a lot of time together, looking at tape, looking at, you know, past games, of course. I mean, that's what he said they're doing. I believe it, you know, as far as they're evaluating, they're doing the evaluation. And now, if you have an issue with the term clean slate, I don't necessarily have an issue of him saying it, but I understand why he's saying it. My thing is kind of like where Carl is coming from. I'm a wait and see kind of guy. Cause the coaches are always going to say the right things, or they'll mess up and say stupid stuff. That's what coaches do. They have these press conferences and they go off answering robotic type of answers. I mean, that's just what it's going to be, but he's pretty good at it. But you can't fool me. You can't fool Kristen. Cause Carl too, to an extent, well, actually Carl, you too, because we are fans of the same teams. We've seen coaches come on and give us a lot of lip service, and I'm a lip service expert, and he's really good at lip service. So I say all that to say is I'm a wait and see. I mean, they already made roster moves. We weren't on when we had Kareem Martin and Alec Ogletree for cap purposes. They're gone. So
we knew that was gonna happen, dude.
I mean that was it had to happen. So I'm a wait and see guy. Joe Judge is they ask him questions. He gives them very vague answers. I don't necessarily have an answer on not naming them by names, but I can understand why fans would be highly upset. I'm going to go back to Carl real quick. Carl, then we'll go back to Lit. Carl, did you see any of the combine? Is there any prospects that were under your radar that now is kind of on your radar? And if any, and then we'll go to myself, and then we'll go back to Lit.
I saw Rich Eisen run the 40, but I didn't watch anything else.
I didn't see that.
that was all I saw at the combine.
That was awesome.
I can't. That is the one thing. Like, you know, a couple of years, 5-6 years ago, I may have been into that. I cannot watch the combine. I find it to be just something that I just And the fact that it was on at 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
you know, like. Is this really necessary? Like, really?
They really think about taking it on the road, man.
Well, they should. But, you know, the one thing that I did get that came out of it was this left tackle from Louisville.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Mekhi Becton. Now, I saw a couple of ACC games, and I guess he didn't really stand out to me when I watched him. But you know, this is what the combine is for. You see guys measure up, and you see, you know, height, weight, bench press, you know, and all this speed and all kind of stuff. And you look at it, and I saw some of the highlights of him online. And I said, whoa, and it got me thinking. I said, you know, and I think I texted Lynn about this. I said, you know, for a general manager who's talked about defense winning championships, you know, there's a pretty good chance that the first pick of the draft that he would have had in the first 3 years would be a quarterback, a running back, and an offensive lineman. Like, I can almost see him doing this, you know, drafting a guy like him and saying this guy's going to, you know, protect Daniel Jones for the next, you know, 10 years or so. Those kind of him. I think Tristan Wirfs was the other guy who's been talked about for months from the University of Iowa. As the two, and I think Isaiah Simmons, if I have this correct, someone can correct me on this, he finished with a 4.340. Is that accurate?
He sure did. He sure did.
Now,
and his vertical jump was sick. I've never seen a linebacker do that ever, I don't think.
Now, Kristen, here's the thing about that. See, I would be very comfortable drafting him if I had a knowledge of the coach that would be coaching him and his ability. Because I don't know that, I believe that that particular type of player is going to be someone that has to be coached correctly. And because he's not totally a linebacker and he's not totally a safety either, he's sort of a hybrid of both, which is problematic because a player like that, you have to be so creative with him that he doesn't technically have a position. And so if he doesn't technically have a position, then I'm very uncomfortable drafting him fourth. I'd almost want to get a guy that I have a very good feeling could be dominant at whatever position he's going to play from the start of his existence on the team.
Well, you know what's good about Simmons is he does have the versatility. You know, he can play a number of positions, which is great. But I agree with what you're saying about him being coached up. The kid is actually very coachable. This is the kind of guy that doesn't need much direction. You tell him what to do and he does it. That's the kind of guy that he is. You give him – go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree with you 100%. My only trepidation on taking him is because this coaching staff is so inexperienced that I'm giving him to an inexperienced coach. Like if – I don't know. I'm trying to think of a high quality, high experienced defensive coordinator that who's been around for 5, 6, 10 years. I'm trying to think of a guy off the top of my head. Like Wade Phillips was the guy I was thinking about. You know, who's been around and could take a player and say, okay, I'm going to use him in all these different ways. I don't know much about this guy that the Giants brought in as defensive coordinator.
Right.
So to right off the bat, I'm going to hand him this particular player and say, hey, listen, Big Bread, he has no track record of anything. So that's my fear of taking not the player itself, just the coaching staff and the infrastructure that exists that he would be coming into.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's what kind of makes me nervous. But I think that, honestly, this guy is like a freak of nature. He's really amazing. He's fast. And you have to also think we gave up almost, 29.8, I would say almost 30 points per game last year, last season. From rival teams that were trash. Almost 30 points per game. That's embarrassing. Our biggest thing, we have to protect our quarterback. And I think this guy can do it. He can play slot. He can play at the line of scrimmage. He can do whatever. I think he's going to be a good fit, but I do agree with you, Carl. We don't know how this guy is going to take to Simmons. Simmons could be easily adaptable. I know he is. You know, these kids coming out of college, they're like sponges. They do exactly what they're told, especially the first year, right? They got to make a really good impression. It's yes, sir, and they do their job, and that's it. But I like him because he has that agility. He's fast off the mark. He's absolutely amazing. His vertical jump was absolutely sick. I don't know if anybody saw it. But for a 6'5 guy, you know, to be jumping like that and to be leap is just incredible to me. But I really think I want Simmons over Tristan. I do like Tristan, but he doesn't have the versatility of Simmons, honestly. I also do like Okuda. Mm-hmm. I do like Okuda from Ohio State.
Now that, I know we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and Steve, you can chime in on this as well. I had made mention, I think we were doing the defensive show a couple of weeks back, where I mentioned about, well, what would happen if you put a high-quality, day-end dominant cornerback on the roster? Like, what would that – what would the fallout from that particular pick be? Because there's a lot of evidence to suggest that if you draft him, not only is he starting from day one, he might even be the rookie of the year. There's a good chance of that happening. And do you pass that up? Like, if you tell me right now, like, this guy's going to be – I don't know, Darrell Revis. Like, he projects to be somewhere along that line based on his attributes and already, like, his physical abilities and his talent. Like, if you're telling me right now, that guy could be Darrell Revis within 2 years. He might even be it in his first year, but within 2 years, would you take it?
It's a lot of questions, man. It's pick your poison. How you want to build the roster. Do you want to go that route, or you have a lot of previous draft equity in that position where you could get stronger elsewhere? I mean, you could weigh the pros and cons on each of those areas. I want to go back to Litt, but let me say this real quick, and I'm going to bring this to Litt's attention because we weren't on in like 2 weeks. So the Giants, for whatever it's worth, and Litt was talking about evaluation. I mentioned evaluation, but he was talking about everybody has a clean slate. Now, could we apply that to the scouts? There was two Giant scouts who've been there for two decades, one in the Northeast region, the other guy in the Southwest corner of the country. That would have been Ryan Jones in the East region, so the Northeast region. So my question is that lip service or talking points from Joe Judge, was that applied to getting rid of longtime scouts? I mean, can we be fair when we say that, or we're just talking about players on the field? Because I think when I watched the presser from Joe Judge at the combine, he looked at everything. He kind of implied everything, not just players. He's talking about coaches, scouts, whatever. If you're in the building, you're being evaluated for something. If you don't think we could get you better for whatever you do, if you just deliver coffee, we're going to get somebody who's going to better deliver coffee. That's the message he was trying to say, or he was saying at the combine. I want to go back to what I said about the combine, about them trying to be more of a travel show. You know, why not? I understand why it's in Indianapolis, and Carl, you're familiar with this. Indianapolis makes a lot of sense as far as the staple because of the health industry out there in Indianapolis. It's close to a lot of those physical facilities. But I think they're looking at it to make money in the future. They're going to take it to, on a road to different places, kind of like they go to different cities like the draft. So I think that it could work. I mean, it's a way to make money for the league, and it's good for the local economies wherever you go. So that is something they were in discussions with. I'm gonna go back to Lit on that, but my thoughts on the combine. I'm not really feeling like Carl. I like the combine. I like watching it as an event, but I'm not feeling it being in the primetime slot. It was cool where it was like 1 o'clock on a Sunday. I was cool with that.
Yeah.
Versus 7 p.m.
Saturday morning.
Like, now you're cutting into my Rangers time right now. You're cutting into my Knicks time. You know, that's how I look at it, Kristen and Carl. You know, you're cutting into my games. You know, but
Saturday afternoon at like 11, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, if you're flipping the channels, you're like, oh, okay, combine's on. I'll watch a few minutes
of
this.
Right, right.
But 8 o'clock at night on a Thursday or a Friday, like, really?
No way. No bueno. I don't like that part. It ain't that big. But I know they're trying to make it a prime time thing, and I can't knock them for that. Maybe people will bite, and over the years, it will catch people on. I don't know if it was you, Carl, or Lit, and we're going to go back to Lit. The punter from, I think it was Arizona, that was Turk that did all those bench pressing. I saw that. That was crazy. There's some athletic offensive linemen in this thing, man. I'm currently working on my draft board. Combine didn't really necessarily help or hurt what I thought as far as our needs and best player available. But it is still somewhat of an evaluation because it helps me go back to look at old games. I'll go dig it up. And say, oh, okay, you know, like for instance, Becton, like, I didn't watch a lot of Louisville games. You to watch him on the field, like, oh, wow, this guy's a mountain, man. You may have to consider all options, you know, whether we're going to stay at number four or go back. Lit, I mentioned the scouts that are no longer on the team. We're talking about evaluation with the coaches, Joe Judge. What is your assessment of Joe Judge thus far? I mean, I know you're giving your assessment as far as, you know, what's he saying. How do you honestly, Carl kind of was really direct on how he felt, but how do you actually feel about Joe Judge thus far as a head coach? I mean, it's hard to say because we haven't seen him in action, but just as far as since him being hired, and then we'll go back to Kristen.
Well, you know, his 30, 45 days on the job, I guess he's just trying to earn a name for himself. He's trying to establish himself as the head coach coming from the Belichick tree, hoping to be successful. You know, as we've talked about before, the surrogates of Belichick have not been the best of successful head coaches. He's had a couple of coaches that have made the playoffs, but that is to the extent of it. Steve, back the interesting move, and again, I don't know who would have pulled the trigger on those two terminations of those two scouts, whether it be Gettleman or Gettleman and a collective of the coaching staff. But I want to ask you, Steve, I was trying to think, why would they let those scouts go? Because if you look and listen to a lot of the people that call the show, Gettleman smashed the draft. Gettleman smashed the draft. Past 2 years, smash it. Found this guy, found this guy, found this guy. Why would you get rid of those two scouts? I don't understand why would you get rid of two scouts who found you X-Man, Valentine, scouted Will Hernandez, scouted Lorenzo Carter. Those scout, why were they released, relieved of duties? I don't understand why, when you gave accolades to Gettleman the past 2 years, his guys himself knocked it out of the park, and then you released the two scouts. I don't know, doesn't make any sense unless there's an underlying thing with maybe Gettleman scared. Maybe Joe Judge wants to mark his territory. I don't know. But why would you get rid of two classy scouts who knocked your last two drafts out of the park?
Analytics. No, I'm just fucking with you.
Don't stop, dude.
Computer folk.
That's good, though, Steve. That's good. Hey,
That's another show.
Hey.
Well, honestly, that is part of the equation. Remember, he said, they're implementing that. He wasn't really for that. So maybe it has something to do with that. I don't know. It's possible. I don't know. Well, go ahead, Lit.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, I think it was Carl who brought up the Jeff Okuda thing. That there's been a lot of talk, a lot of vibes. He's had great interviews. He's met with the organization, dinners, X, Y, and Z. Can you imagine the turmoil if they do draft Jeff Okuda at number four. What that's going to be so much crow Gettleman's going to have to eat, because that means that DeAndre Baker is probably gone or going to the bench as a backup. He gave up picks for that guy, or Ballantyne will be gone, or Beal will be gone. Those were that. I would love to have Jeff Okuda, but I don't think Gettleman wants to eat crow by drafting a cornerback when he's given up so much stock for those players that I named over the past 2 years. But I would love to get Jeff Okuda. I think he would be a step up from what we have on both sides. Both sides. But I don't think the guy can do it, because I think he's on thin ice. And if he pulls a move like that, I mean, it's just going to add to this being his last year.
All right, Kristen, you want to, let's go to you.
What would it be the wrong move, though?
I think he would be an upgrade, but that would also question David Gettleman's mindset for why he gave up so much capital for DeAndre Baker, and you're drafting a cornerback now at number four.
I guess.
Well, Gettleman also likes Jerry Jeudy, also, the wide receiver from Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he could go any way with this. He can go with Isaiah Simmons. He could turn around and get, you know, Jerry Jeudy. He can get – there's Jedrick Willis. I mean, there's a whole bunch of guys that are just sitting there. I like Willis, too. He's a great run blocker. You know, if you want to upgrade the O-line, that's a good way to go, too. He's another one from Alabama. There's just a lot. There's a lot. But our whole thing is we've got to protect the quarterback. And the dropbacks that Danny was doing this year, the guy didn't even drop back for 2 seconds without them killing him, just running him over. So we really, for me, it's all about defense. It's really all about defense. And I'll be very upset if we don't pick Simmons at four.
I look at – Carl, let's go ahead. Let's go to you, and then I'll speak, and we'll go back to it, and we can get back on. Go ahead, Carl.
Well, you know, see, the issue is that, you know, 3 years now into this, and the two issues that the Giants have are blocking and getting to the quarterback. They can't protect the quarterback, and they can't get to the quarterback. And so we're at a point now where – we're basically saying, hey, listen, if they take a great defensive player, perfect. If they take a great offensive lineman, great. Because they desperately need both.
Right.
It's
right.
Almost as if you take a coin, put it up in the air, either option is good. I can't knock either one. And I'm like,
right,
man, have we progressed here over 2 years to where this is a question? Like, That to me is almost the fundamental issue. And now, you know, here's the other thing too, guys. You know, unfortunately, and I remember we discussed it at the time, and everybody was on a big high after it happened. You know, the biggest issue right now is finding a pass rusher. And if you've noticed the last couple of days, there's been a lot of franchise tags that have gone out. I know the guy from Jacksonville got the franchise tag last week. I think the guy from the Chiefs got it as well. I'm not 100% sure about that. But, you know, if you're telling me that the only available high-quality pass rusher in the draft, I mean, available to sign for just dollars, is Clowney, or I have to trade draft picks that I already gave away for a defensive tackle that they're going to, I guess, re-sign, then, boy, because here's the thing. That one game in December against the Redskins, that quote-unquote victory, has had a number of ramifications. Because had the Giants simply been, let's just say, drafting number two, their pass rusher would have been picked already. But now, because that isn't in play, they still have to figure out their pass. I guess Marcus Golden's going to go to free agency now, so he's probably not going to be back with the team either. Well, where are these pass rushers coming from? Where? Are they trading for them? Are they paying, you know, overpaying and paying over market rate for guys? Like, where are these guys coming from? Because when the season starts in about 6 months, and the question is, why can't they rush the passer? Well, do you guys see a path where either by the draft or by free agency that particular problem gets solved?
I'm willing to give it a little bit of time. I understand the concern, absolutely, no doubt. I'll answer it like Free agency in 2 weeks. They have some cash. Not even in the right scheme. Like, who knows? The Giants may be evaluating everything. We're talking in the 3-4 front itself. Like, we may not even have to be in that. So we'd be going through all kind of wholesale changes. So when you go, just trying, of course, money on the cap. Pass rush is where I'm going to say that's a very question. This team has so many holes. I mean, pick your poison. I mean, nothing is going to be solved probably in this season or even maybe the next season. So you just kind of have to have building blocks on where you can get better or plug in as many holes or band-aids over the wound as best possible. That's a great question, Carl. As far as pass rushes, sometimes you may have to get lucky and you can't count on that necessarily. You just have to scout well, draft well. And then I thought we did well with Marcus Golden in free agency, but we have to go back to the drawing board again. So we shall see. The last time I did the calculation, if you count all that. Defensively, I mean, I have my philosophy, and I'll address that in 2 weeks on our free agency episode. But so many ways we could go with this with our linebackers, with possible edge rushers. You can even go to trade route if you feel like you need to. We have holes on the offensive line as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of places to go in that. And I understand the cornerback situation. And I don't think – here's the thing, man. If you really – this goes with any sport. If you believe you have the player that – what it takes to get your team to be better and it happens to be a position probably necessarily not need, you still may have to address it. So, if Giants, the organization, are looking at another cornerback who's premier, and he is premier at his position, and that means double down on the same position at the top of the draft, you may have to do that. Maybe you can use that as a position of strength, and maybe you coach it up on each side of the field defensively with the cornerbacks. If you go that route, I'm not saying I would go that route, but if they choose to go that route, I mean, you could always double down. I mean, it's no different than kind of like if you look at Arizona, the quarterback position. I mean, they drafted a quarterback. They said, you know what, we got a new coach. Let's look into this. Let's look into Kyler Murray. Although we already drafted Josh Rosen out of UCLA, you can always reevaluate what you have because you have different coaches, different people just looking at it, saying, man, we don't like it this way. Let's try this, and this is here why. We'll go back to Kristen. Anything else you'd like to say about the combine, free agency, prospects? Carl mentioned the coaching staff, Kristen. Are you optimistic, like Jason Garrett, Freddie Kitchens, Patrick Graham, the offensive line coaches? Because I know Ed had an issue with the offensive line coaches. What about the coaching staff? Do you have anything on that? And then we'll go back to Carl.
I think anything is an improvement from last year, honestly. You know, we had a coach that was lifeless. He is saying all the right things. We just have to – we're on a wait-and-see thing. We have to wait for free agency. We've got to wait for all these things to happen and all these things to drop. And then we can put all the pieces of the puzzle together. But – until then, yeah, I am a little more optimistic than I was last year. Absolutely. I'm much more optimistic. I just hope Kitchens steps up and my friend there, Carrot Top, I hope he does his friggin' job. But we'll see what happens. Because he's a friggin' clown. He really is a clown to me. I'm sorry. He's a friggin' clown. But anyway, yeah, I don't know who to boo first, him or Boston.
How do you feel about him as a coordinator, though? Head coach is one different animal. Like, coordinator, he
yeah.
was...
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I think I would have been protesting at games if that was the case. That's a whole nother monster. But, no, I the guy knows what he's doing. He's got experience. It's not like, you know, we just picked this guy up off the street. He knows his shit. So we'll see. We'll see what he does. I'll give him a chance. I don't really have a choice at this point, do I? So it is what it is. We just have to see, wait and see what they all do together. And I hope that the camaraderie with the coaches is as good as the players are this year, because communication is key with everybody. So hopefully everybody's on the same page and we can get this machine going, hopefully.
Now, Carl, the same question as far as Carrot Top. We can run with that for this year. We call him Carrot Top.
Thank you.
We can run with that.
I'm trademarking that after tonight. That's it.
Right.
The Mad Clapper.
There it is.
Yes.
Oh, this
good one. AKA the Mad Clapper.
Are you confident with him being a coordinator after all these years? He was a head coach. Maybe things have changed. Well, see, he's been around football, so I don't think I'm as pessimistic like maybe most fans. I know you're not as big on the hire as well, Carl, but let me ask you that about the coordinator. What about even how is going to translate the coaching up the offense, which was an issue? Now, and also going back to the combine and ultimately the draft. Is trading down an option, knowing that we lost draft capital when we went and got Leonard Williams? What's your thoughts on all that, Carl?
Well, the problem with drafting fourth, as we see now, is that you don't control. They can't control the draft. The draft really, as we talked about this a couple weeks ago, when I think I was telling Chris about this, I said the draft really starts at number three. Like the Detroit Lions, let's just say if the Giants are drafting third, hypothetically, the Giants could basically call their shot with a couple of the teams that want to trade up and get the Alabama quarterback. You could have then extracted your ransom right then and there. But because they're drafting fourth, the team that's drafting fifth knows that the Giants are not taking a quarterback, so they can just wait. They can just wait the Giants out. Detroit makes their move, they can just wait the Giants out. They know the Giants are not drafting, so they don't have to make any trades. And so that is part of the problem. Trading back, you know, unless that this Jordan Love stuff is true, let's just say I think McShay had a draft mock the other day that had, I think, the Chargers at number six taking him. You know, if I'm – the Giants are basically not in a position
– You cats never get their mock drafts right, by the way. But go ahead.
Yeah, they got like a 15% success rate at best, even if they're lucky.
Right.
But the problem is, like, if you're...
Oh, man, it's 15%?
Yeah. It's somewhere between 10 and 15%. I mean, after, like, the first, like, four guys, after, like, the first four guys, you could just basically take a dart and just, just throw it on the wall. But, you know, the problem is if you want to trade back, like, where are you trading back to? That's the issue right now as well. So I can't even co-sign doing that, because there's not going to be an interested team unless the draft falls a certain way on draft day itself, where all of a sudden a situation is presented and then you could say, okay, I'm going to move two spots back or three spots back and perhaps hope that the guy that you want is there. So unfortunately, you know, because of how they finished the season, they're not in a position really to sort of control their own destiny from that standpoint. As far as the Mad Clapper goes, I can't go on his performance 12 years ago as a coordinator. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
the game has changed.
That's part of the question.
The game has changed so much in 12 years that how he may have coached offense 12 years ago has no relation to what happens in 2020. Guys pass the ball more. They run the ball less. Blocking is different.
But the only caveat I'll say to that is, it's not like he was sitting on the couch like us watching the games. I mean, he's literally there. For those 12 years, not as a coordinator, but as a coach. So it's not like he's totally removed. It's not like a Dick Vermeil situation, like how he left the Eagles, came back to the Rams like a whole nother decade. Although that pulled off and he won a Super Bowl. But, you don't give it no weight as far as him even actually being there on a day-to-day basis, even if it is as a head coach? Or how do you feel about that?
No, because, I mean, we saw the Cowboys – We've seen the Cowboys offense the last, 10 years as he was a coach. Did you watch the Cowboys offense and think, boy, you know, they're really creative in what they do out there every game? Like, did anybody get that feeling?
Oh.
We've watched them 20 times. Yeah, he was a coach there for 10 years. So we've watched them one-on-one 20 times. Then any of those 20 times, did you come away from come away thinking, boy, I tell you what, that is one hell of an offensive design that they got going on there. Outside of the fact that, damn, they got five really good offensive linemen and they're running the ball right down our throat.
Not necessarily that, but I look at the development. Even if you go back to Romo, I know you don't like that name, Kristen, but how he improved as a regular season quarterback. Limiting the margin of error, and that's the number one issue I have. I'm pretty sure most Giant fans have with our quarterback is protect the football. Let's start with the basics. Let's start with just keeping our possessions alive. I want to just the little things like that. It's crazy as that sounds, but I don't think Daniel Jones has ever. I mean, you could go to Daniel Rutcliffe, the head coach of Duke, and. He hasn't had that NFL level of coaching, and that includes Pat Shurmur or Mike Shula. Call it for what it's worth. We may not even see that in Jason Garrett. All I'm saying is to say we got to start somewhere to have our first round draft pick quarterback develop. Start somewhere with the flashes of games here and there is okay, but. Protecting the football. Carl, this is how I look at the Giants, how I would build this. Be a game manager. Don't be a hero. I mean, I would like to duplicate somewhat what the Seattle Seahawks did, although I think Russell Wilson is a better player than Daniel Jones, even when he came out of Wisconsin. All I'm saying is have a stout defense, run the football, play hard defense. That's the formula I would go with basically our salary cap structure. The quarterback doesn't have to wing it all over the place because he never really had to. He was never really that guy at Duke anyway doing that. What's your thoughts as far as building the team inside out, coaching staff? Would you want to be more offensive oriented or based off our salary cap? Where would you like to put the assets into this team and just starting this season?
Well, I mean, if they draft an offensive lineman fourth, then that would mean that you're just sort of projecting ahead. You're going to have a high-paid quarterback, a high-paid running back, a high-paid offensive lineman. Then you're basically telling us that a majority of the resources are going to go to offense, despite the claim that you believe defense wins championships. The two don't compute. You know, there's no anchor on the defense. There's no and that's the issue right now is that unless the Giants sort of balance out the roster.
Mm-hmm.
The way this is headed is that this thing is sort of heavily slanted towards the offense, and I just do not. I think it's a recipe, unless you tell me that the quarterback is going to be an elite player, and I'm not talking about a guy that just what's the best way I can put this? Eli Manning's not the right word, but I'm talking about a guy that. Basically needs everything. There's certain guys that are what are called force multipliers, right? That if you take an average team, he can make them a playoff team. And then there's certain guys who need a whole bunch of things to happen for them to be a playoff team. We don't know what Daniel Jones is going to be. You know, we'll have a better inkling on it this season because the way the quarterbacks progress these days. I'm sorry, I can't wait. I can't wait 3 or 4 years on you to make an evaluation. I'm usually going to know. And then the way the progression has gone now in the league the last 5 years, you kind of have an inkling about year two of where this is headed. And from that standpoint, I may as well just go all in on the offense and just try to score 30 points a game and hope for the best on defense.
Christian, do you have any thoughts on that as far as the assets on – offense or versus the defense? I think you already answered that in a way earlier this episode, probably because you want to go defense first round, but are you sticking to your guns on that?
Absolutely. We have a lot of things we have to change on this team. We have tons of holes to fill, but a big chunk of that is our defense. and we have to draft smart, and we've got to get them quick. Like Carl said, we're not in the market for a quarterback, so we could care less. We're good. Nobody's going to take Simmons. Simmons is ours. So at four, we should take Simmons and build off of that. But right now, we don't have any driving force to say that they run the defense. We don't have anybody that runs the defense. There's no leader in the defense at all.
I think
we were trying to find it with Williams.
Let me ask you this. I'll throw out a couple of names. And you mentioned if we go that route with Simmons, which I'm highly in favor for. I mean, I've been on saying that during the college football season. What about the return? If you could get something out of Ryan Connolly, who would probably be one of those linebackers playing right away. I mean, you're getting him back. Who knows what the ACL status? What about the young? If you was to go with that, are you cool with that? Maybe pick up a veteran linebacker along the way. Or a veteran defensive player along the way. Are you cool with that?
Yes. Better with the defensive player. Yeah. To pick up later. Absolutely. Yep. We have to build the defense up. We have to. You know, there's all kinds of rumors flying around that Ingram might go, and, you know, they might trade him. I don't want to even think about any of that right now. My main focus for this team is defense. If I was at that draft, I would be drafting defense. It would be wonderful if I could get a little bit of both. Absolutely. Because we need both. But defense is it's not what we're accustomed to as Giants fans. This is not the defense that we've been watching the past couple of years. It's not us. This is not what we're built for. But if we just draft smart and hopefully Gettleman will this time, we should be fine. I'm good with Simmons, and I'm even good with what's his name, the other guy. Even if we don't get him by whatever chance, I just forgot his name, Tristan. He's also very good. So either one, I would take them. But my number one guy, I would have to say, is Simmons. I was a little concerned at the combine with the two injuries that actually both of them sustained. I think it was in the leap or something, something about both of their hamstrings. So, but the guys are very agile. These guys are big, but they can move so well. And the thing that I said, I think I said it before, Simmons can be used in many positions, and that's what we kind of need. I wish we could just have him at linebacker, but if the linebacker is good, then let's get him somewhere else. Let's get him in the slot. Put him on the line of scrimmage, wherever. He's good wherever you want to put him. So I just hope to God we get Simmons. That's all.
All right. Let's get this to final thoughts. Carl, we'll lead off with you for final thoughts. But, Carl, I also forgot to ask you, because the chain of commands last year and going into this year is going to be different, because for the last couple of seasons, Pat Shurmur was the head coach and play caller, which I'm not really in favor for unless you're an elite play caller. But now you're kind of going back to your traditional offensive coordinator is going to do that. You're going to have your defensive coordinator do what he does, and then you have the head coach kind of seeing over the entire thing, not necessarily playing double duty. But if you have any thoughts on that with Joe Judge, your thoughts on that, and then your final thoughts, and then we go to Kristen, and shout outs to Lit for coming on. Go ahead, Carl, fire away.
Well, kind of clarify what you mean by in terms of the offensive coordinator. I was trying to process the question, and
Are you a fan that is in favor of a head coach being not just the head coach, but also the play caller as well, like what Shurmur was last year? Or you rather have your traditional head coach, maybe like Coughlin, and then you have the offensive coordinator doing the play calls?
Okay.
What's your preference?
You know, I actually don't mind it. Usually, and I think Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy sort of have this sort of relationship in Kansas City. Like, Reid will have a concept of a play that he wants to call, and then Bieniemy has a couple of options. You know, they sort of talk it out, you know, in game. But they've already planned the whole game out in advance. So when the communication is coming, both of them are in lockstep of what exactly they want to do, as opposed to just like designating one guy. Because the one thing that I've come to hate over like the last like 10 years is this sort of idea of when an offense isn't doing well or when a defense isn't doing well, we just blame the coordinator as if to suggest that the head coach has nothing to do with what's going on. And
right.
I like the idea of having now, I don't know if they're going to do this, but, you know, I want the coach and I want the offensive coordinator to be in lockstep in terms of what's going on out there. So this year when the game plan is coming out and the game is happening in real time, I want to make sure that these guys know, because I want shared responsibility and I want shared accountability. I don't want where if the offense is struggling, you know, for a couple of games, we say, well, Jason Garrett's not doing his job. No, the head coach is not doing his job. That's, you know, the coach approves all game plans before Sunday goes out. It's not as if the guy's sort of running on an island. So that's the way I would proceed and hope. That's just my imagination, just thinking outside the box or thinking in the box, depending on how you want to look at it and proceed that way. As far as, you know, any, you know, final thoughts here, the Giants simply just need a lot of good players. That's really it. You know, we've talked about it tonight in terms of where we want to go in the draft. There's no bad option. You know, unfortunately, the Giants are in a position where 3 years into this little grand experiment that we're still sort of talking about the same stuff we were talking about a couple of years ago. You know, the decay of the team from an offensive line and defensive line, even with all the changes, with all the turnover, with all the new players, with all the new coaches, we're still sort of at the exact same place in terms of how do we block these guys and how do we get these guys from stopping, you know. And unfortunately, you know, that has to change. Like, at some point, that has to end. And 4 years it takes to do that, I'm not totally sure it takes 4 years to do it. I think incompetent teams take 4 and 5 years. I think good teams that know what they're doing take a lot less than that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shout out to Carl, man. Thank you very much. Kristen, your final thoughts. We've got about 30, 45
seconds. I totally agree with Carl about both of them coming together and talking to each other. Four eyes are better than two. You know, they do. They have a plan before they go out already. But one guy might see something that the other one doesn't. So I would really like that communication with both coaches, the offensive coordinator and the head coach. I totally agree with that. You can't put the blame on just one guy. It's a collective thing. I absolutely agree with that.
All right. Fun episode. Lit. Kristen, Carl, myself, we'll be on in 2 weeks. That will be the start of the free agency period, the day of March the 19th, 2020. Free agency, we'll talk about the moves, not with just our team, but around the league. And then that will help my draft board immensely, what we will be doing that week with the signings and the domino effect and so forth. But I can't believe that even from what I understood, Kristen, you know, I don't follow a lot of the news. I was shocked that people are even throwing the Giants name in the hat of getting Tom Brady. That's not going to happen. Like, that just doesn't.
That's just absolutely ridiculous.
So who
is that not laughable? Who? I mean, the sheep are running amok.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Seriously.
That's not. It just doesn't that, make sense. So we
wait,
don't, we don't
was that was that in the Onion?
Man, it was people were making things up. I mean, I guess when you have an off season in XFL, I mean, people will say anything. You know, have a water cooler talk. That's just that's
right.
That's not, yeah. All right, we'll be
this
back.
This seem relevant.
Right. Shout outs to Lit, Kristen, Carl, and myself. iTunes Podcast Republic, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify. Sangrasu, Blibu.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, bleep bloop, bleep bloop, bleep bloop, bleep bloop, bleep bloop, bleep bloop.